courtside the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 298. Andrew with you once again, and this week I'm joined by D for Three from the forums, my special co-host this week. Welcome to the NLSC podcast, D.
Hi, happy to be here. I've always wanted to be on the podcast, so let's get to it.
Yeah, we were talking before we started recording a bit and mentioned that we were trying to get you on a couple of times. We talked about it at least a couple of times in the past, so here we are, and thank you for coming on. Unfortunately, Ben and Kenny have been caught up the last few weeks. That's why I haven't been putting out shows. Do apologize for that, everyone, but hopefully we are back on the air, maybe with some co-hosts, some special guest co-hosts, maybe with Kenny and Ben once they get back to that we can sync our schedules. But yeah, we have been off the air for a while, and some big stuff, D. Some patches for NBA 2K20, and some rather big news about NBA Live.
Yeah, I think the bigger news, obviously, is the NBA Live 20 cancellation, and I'm definitely looking forward to diving into that. And patch 1.07 with NBA 2K 20. And as I stated to you prior, I'm definitely enjoying the offline experience a little bit more after the patches than I did on launch. So definitely looking forward to talking about that as well.
So let's dive into the NBA 2K20 stuff. It's been out for, I guess, almost 10 weeks now. If I'm thinking about how many weeks in my team, how many challenges there are, that's kind of how I've kept track of how many weeks it's been out now, which I believe is 9, almost to the end of my free packs for the pre-order. It's changed a few times, as you noted. Patch 1.07 is the latest update. There's been a lot of controversy around it, the whole Fix 2K20 hashtag, which has now been taken over for WWE 2K20, which has proven to be an even more problematic release, actually. NBA 2K20 looks a lot more solid by comparison. There's been controversy, of course, and there's always that battle between the online and offline gamers, people who want different things. And I know you and I, being more traditional gamers, traditionally, in that respect, we've had those... We've expressed our concerns about online and in the forum about the online adjustments coming back to haunt offline, but it seems to have worked out okay as of patch 107 for the offline gaming.
It has, and you know, it's not just over on the NLSC, as you know, that people have brought up the fact that the online gameplay has basically, the fact that they've been focusing so much on that has hurt the offline gameplay, you know, for people who play now or my league and whatnot, and you know, even my team gameplay as well. And you know, I've seen some threads over on Operation Sports that have, you know, 10, 20, 30 different pages on it of people talking about how they wish that the online gameplay had a separate gameplay mechanic system than the offline game. And obviously, that would be, in a perfect world, that's what we want. I think in a perfect world, that would give everybody what they wanted, and for the most part, and they'd be able to, you know, get what they need out of the online play and the offline play. But obviously, that's not going to happen.
And that is unfortunate, because you change things to compensate for the online gamer. The CPU is able to react much quicker than the user, so they're able to take advantage of those mechanics. We've even seen that in NBA Live. I thought the last couple of NBA Live patches, NBA Live 19, that is, changed the shooting, really affected that for offline play, because it's designed for online play where users are a bit slower to react, but the computer, the CPU, can react much quickly and contest the shot. And NBA Live 19 has a very long shot meter, or indeed shot mechanics, because shot mechanics are the same whether you've got the meter on or off. And it's had that same thing, that getting that balance between online and offline play is a really big problem, a really big challenge that I think both EA and 2K are really kind of struggling with at the moment, because you've got that real war between the two factions of gamers.
And like you said, what you alluded to, it basically boils down to, it hurts the consistency. Basically what happens is, and to go back to your point on NBA Live 19, the demo gameplay, I even posted a video on YouTube, a gameplay video playing against my brother. The demo gameplay was really solid for NBA Live 19. And even for the first week or two when the game first came out, the gameplay felt it was reactive. The shooting felt tight, and it felt great, actually. I felt that the game, that the pace of the gameplay was a lot more enjoyable, and it made a lot more sense. And then, you know, throughout the game cycle, they started patching it and patching it more. And the more they patched it, the more they took out the fun. And what happened was, is, you know, you'd have people complain about the shooting and whatnot, and so they'd patch it. And then somebody would complain about the defense, like the step back defense, and then they'd patch it. And then they'd be like, oh, no, you did it too much. Like, yeah. You over-adjusted. Can you adjust it back? And then they adjust it back a little. And what happens is it creates this inconsistency and this frustration from the consumer base, where they're like, basically, and this is where you get those comments of, what are you guys doing?
Exactly. And it's been the same with 2K. You know, 2K17 was pretty bad with it, if you remember. That gameplay changed a lot. They've brought it back a little bit with 2K18, 19, 20, but there's still been those changes that not everybody's been happy with. It's satisfied one section of the consumer base, but again, either because it's been offline or online, or people who prefer different ways, people who want online to be more sim, people who want offline to be less sim, people who don't really care about the NBA side of things, people who really do care about the NBA side of things, trying to satisfy everybody, they often have gone for the solution that hasn't really satisfied anyone sometimes. I mean, a lot of the adjustments, and I've said this in the forum, for 2K Online, they've been made to improve the online experience, but as somebody who's been playing a lot of Pro-Am, Walk-On, etc., a bit of Playground as well the last few years, it hasn't necessarily fixed it. The online hasn't really gotten better. It's gotten worse, if anything. But it is catering to an audience, but it seems to be a very small chunk of the audience, or a very vocal chunk of the audience, at least.
Exactly, and a lot of it is probably based on influencer feedback too, because those are the people that are reaching, you know, those are the ones with, you know, a million YouTube views.
Exactly, yeah, and subscribers, absolutely, and you wonder if some of these influencers, and, you know, I'm not saying none of them know what they're talking about or don't have the best interest in at heart or whatever, but not all of them do, you know, and they've all got their own ideas for the game, and if those ideas don't gel with everybody else, well, who cares, because it's what they want and they've got the audience. So that's who they cater to. And there was a post on Reddit about the MMOification of NBA 2K that was posted last year and brought up a lot of great points. And this is from a former developer who worked on EVE Online and mentioned that it's really catering towards the elite crowd for online. So it's really, there's that gatekeeping now in the online sense with 2K that wasn't there a few years ago. And it's really been disappointing to see.
And I think also what that creates is... just trying to think of a lack of a, you know, a better term, but almost like a snobby user base.
Oh, yes, elitism. Absolutely, elitism.
Yeah, and there's a lot of elitism now, and I think that I think the biggest frustration is watching it is that it's almost encouraged. Mm. And I don't see it going backwards at all or being fixed. I'm seeing it that type of approach with the gameplay and the sim nation and all of that stuff, I feel like that's being kind of piled on, and it's getting you know, even worse throughout each release. And, you know, as far as the 2K20, you know, in things like the blow by defense, the weak defense that we're seeing, and by the way, some legacy issues did exist for, you know, that you could go wide and finish often on the fast break in 2K17. 2K17 had pretty poor defense AI intelligence on defense, where players would get backdoored and all of that stuff, and you couldn't do anything about it because you can't control all five guys at once, etc. But I think a lot of things, like with the blow-by defense and the defensive issues in general, and even like the, you know, I've talked about it, the skating and whatnot, lack of foot planning, is I think a lot of that is to cater to that online experience, to give a certain control and feel to the people who are playing online. And I think that... in my opinion, they need to scale that back, and they need to equally focus on both modes. And I know that may not be, from a marketing perspective, the sound way to go. And maybe I'm being selfish in that want, but I do believe that people you know, over the last 3 years especially, have been a bit more frustrated with the game.
I think so, and those legacy issues, you know, I think we're getting to a point, because this is the, by user score, the worst rated 2K ever, I believe, as of recently, on Metacritic at least, but it's also one of the best selling. So there's that disconnect between the sales and the response, and people keep buying it despite the frustration with the game. I think for me, I have had fun with 2K20 so far. I think my frustrations with it, apart from the motion engine that came in a couple of years ago, is that there are those legacy issues, and it's getting harder and harder to grin and bear them sometimes. And I don't know if that's the same with you, but and I think it may be quite possibly be, and with a lot of people, is that they're, you know, these legacy issues have been around for so long that 2K20 is perhaps in a vacuum not as bad as a lot of people say, but it's getting to the point that they're just sick of these legacy issues. They can't ignore them anymore, and it's a culmination of that, all that frustration.
No, absolutely. And there's a couple points on that, too, is 2K fatigue is real. Mm. There are people, and that's what it comes from mostly, is, like you stated, the legacy issues, the, you know, the body blocks and body steals that happen out of nowhere, the passing mechanics that are wonky and have kind of been pretty much the same. And actually, I think they were better in 2K16, you know, for multiple years. And just the overall feel, I don't think it's fresh. And I think that there are people out there. And, you know, part of the thing you had mentioned was, you know, if we're talking about them, you know, they buy it anyway. The problem is, and by the way, this is not a knock on 2K. What they've done is obviously, honestly, it's what they've done is brilliant. Mm. They've, you know, they get record sales every year, etc. But when you say they have to, you know, they still buy it. These people love basketball. Basketball as a sport is as popular as it's ever been worldwide right now. And they only have one choice for 5-on-5 basketball with a sim, especially for 2K20, because Live wasn't released. They really only have one title that's going to give them that NBA content. And Live hasn't been able to compete over the last few years outside of cancellations because they don't even get close to matching the content and the modes, and what they don't give people the full experience that they want. So the only NBA title giving these gamers, these potential consumers and consumers, etc., the full gaming experience in picture is NBA 2K. So they're going to buy it.
Absolutely. And it's very hard to boycott the only viable option on the market. And this came up in the forum as we were talking about NBA 2K20 sales and NBA Live 20's cancellation, which we'll get to in time. And it was brought up in the forum by one of our members. Well, people can play something else, which is true. But if you want to play basketball, want to play virtual basketball, that is your option. I mean, I can go back and play Fallout, any one of my favorite Fallout games, just to throw out a Fallout mention. I can go back and play any of my favorites or get a new game. You know, I've been looking at Untitled Goose Game because that looks hilarious. You know, I could do that. But if I want to get my virtual hoops fix, you know, Fallout is not a very good basketball game. I'll enjoy Fallout, but it as a basketball simulation, Fallout is terrible. You know, you can say what you want about NBA Live, but Fallout is even worse at being a basketball game.
But the graphics, Andrew. Oh, the graphics are so good.
Oh, it's got the microtransactions too now, so... Fallout 76, so can't get away from this, can you? But that's the point. If you want to play virtual basketball, as you say, it has been the only option, and it has led to that fatigue that you've mentioned. Of course, there's been other controversies as well, and you know, we don't need to get into a whole drama situation. We don't want to become a drama channel here on the NLSC at all. Some of the responses, I think, have been very toxic towards the community, and certainly the community can be very toxic towards the developers as well. But it goes back to something that you touched upon, which is cultivating that toxic atmosphere and that elitism and that snobbery. It all comes together that it has created this a user base that has a very toxic element. So we are seeing that back and forth between either digital marketers or whatever the hell Ronnie is. pseudo-celebrity.
I don't think anybody's really Stir anymore. He's just a face on TVs, I think, is what people are looking at that now.
Pretty much. And like, the controversy with him and you know, talking about Agent 00's immigration status and all kinds of really inappropriate things, and it's it's been very toxic, and even some of the back and forth between developers and so forth, and it's kind of a situation where, you know, yes, we have to take responsibility for how we act online, and all of us, and I'm all for getting rid of toxicity and such, but I think the 2K has cultivated that atmosphere to some extent, and it's really encouraged it. You look at online with the neighborhood, you've got the rep system, and people don't want to play with you if you're not a, you know, legend status or at least all-star, things like that. So there is that elitism and snobbery and toxicity and everything else that has been cultivated by the way the game works, by design. So like you say, it's not sure whether it's going to get any better.
It reminds me of the local leagues that you have. We have some of them around here, and they have like a Class A league, Class B league, and Class C league. Mm-hmm. And Class A league people, they're looking down on those Class B people.
Oh, yeah.
Those Class
yeah.
B, they're looking down on those Class C people, and they're like, "You play Class C? You play Class B?" So there's definitely that that element to it. And the other point too, with what you said, as far as you know, people saying, "Go, well, don't play it," or, you know, "Go play something else," or whatever. Number one, don't have a lot of choices right now. Number two, that is never a reason for a consumer or potential consumer not to give feedback.
Exactly.
I think the most important thing for any company, even as big as 2K, because they're still operating off of feedback, probably just not the right feedback, is to, at times anyway, is to take in, you know, I mean, as a consumer, your job is to basically, if you don't like something, but you want it to get better, then you want to give feedback. And the thing is that people that complain about the game are not complaining about the game most of the time just to complain about it. They want it to get better in some way.
Absolutely.
Whether it's just, you know, they're not looking at the big picture, or they're just doing it for selfish reasons, whatever. They are complaining for the purpose of, I want this element, this gameplay thing, this mode, etc. I want it fixed. And so the saying, go play something else, stop complaining, go play something else, or whatever, or go play live, that doesn't fix that. That doesn't mean that person shouldn't be voicing their concerns with the game.
I'm glad you brought that up, the go play live stuff, because people do bring up live struggles, which are valid criticisms, you know, no doubt about that. But the fact that NBA Live is having those struggles doesn't negate criticism of 2K. But it is one of those techniques that we see for quote-unquote debate online, either saying that you're whining, you're a whiner, you know, you're hating, you know, those two, or possibly, you know, go play something else, as though you're not allowed to complain. And like you say, a lot of people who are having that constructive criticism and offering it up do want the game to get better. They want a better experience, you know. They're not just saying, oh, this game sucks. They're saying, this is why I'm not having a good time with this game. This would be my suggestion to make it better. Are people always saying it in the nicest possible way? Probably not. And that is something we do need to own as a community. But at the same time, you know, shooting each other's down like that and dragging each other down, or saying, oh, well, I don't care about that. You know, so people saying, well, this is the situation with my career, like how they nerfed the VC rewards and in my career after, I think it was patch 106 or 107 that did it.
It was 107, yeah.
107. People saying, you know, oh, well, who cares? Just go play my league with player lock. Well, that's not quite the same as playing my career and don't have the online situation. You know, it is a viable, you can do that. It's a suggestion to throw out, but it's not necessarily the viable solution. Or they'll say, well, I don't care about that, or who cares about that? Nobody plays that, which always translates to I don't play it and I don't care about it. We don't care enough about each other's likes and dislikes or preferences to say, well, okay, yeah, this is our fellow gamer who's got a problem. You know, I'm happy with this situation, but yeah, you deserve to have something good too. And it's all about what we all personally want. And there's that selfishness within the community, I think. And we really need to be supporting each other and saying, yeah, we want the game to be as good for everybody as it possibly can be, and not drag each other down.
Right, exactly. And just because I'm critiquing something on, you know, my league doesn't mean that I don't care about somebody else's online experience.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I think that one thing that, you know, and there's a lot of exaggerations out there, and I'm sure you've seen this by the thousand, is, you know, there'll be people that say, nobody plays my league.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll like that statement, that blanket statement. I'm sorry, but I play my league. And I see my league threads in my league online leagues and all of that NBA offline NBA stuff. you know, for offline My League, I see it all over the place on Twitter, on Operation Sports, on NLSC. Just because you don't play My League, don't make a statement that says, you know, that a blanket statement like nobody plays that mode.
It's the Royal Wii. The Royal Wii, yes. You know, nobody plays that. Only my, because that's the thing, only my preference is valid, is what it comes down to, that kind of selfishness.
Yeah.
So we do need to get rid of that. The other thing that's, of course, the controversy about the patches at the moment are the size, mostly on console, because you look at the PC patches and they're around about 150 to 250 megabytes. On PS4, they've been about 22 gigs, and on Xbox, over 30. So that's a lot to download, especially when there's been 7 patches in the first 9 weeks. So that's something that's also the system. I mean, that's the way it goes with the consoles, I guess, but it's been controversial, obviously, for people to have to download that much. And if you are on a limited plan or not a great speed, it's tough. And, of course, if you're waiting for it to download, you can't log in to get the daily rewards on My Career and The Spin, or the daily login rewards for my team. So it's been an issue.
I think part of that is, first off, you know I'm on PC and I can't go back. But as far as, so send me a 300 megabyte update all day.
Absolutely.
The
2 seconds.
As far as console go, yeah, exactly. It takes like 2 seconds and I'm in. As far as consoles go, I think we're going to see a better system in place, obviously, when they move to next gen PS5, as far as storage and whatnot, and as far as, you know, how much space these are taking up. I mean, we don't know exactly right now, but I'm guessing we're going to see an improvement. I think that as far as the current state, I think the biggest thing is not even the size of the patches. It's people frustrated that they already downloaded a pretty sizable game, and there's now all of this stuff added after. And from what I see from the comments, it's, this is the only game, and it's not. But this is the only game I've seen that has, you know, updates and patches that equal the download size, the original download size. So they're like, you know, why can't they, and the biggest thing is why can't they get it right the first time? Why do we have to have 10 patches in 2 months? Why? And by the way, honestly, those complaints are valid.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's perhaps the bigger controversy, not about the size, is that you have the size, but the patch notes have been very, I hate to use the word lazy because it's very much overused.
Yeah.
But
we've made other changes, basically.
Yeah, many more fixes, you know. It's it's not really, you know, people want to know if we're downloading this much 7 times in 9 weeks, you know, what's included, and also because we want to know what's exactly changed under the hood. But you see things like the nerfs to the VC. I mean, those are probably among the many, many more quote-unquote fixes and changes, but they're very kept very quiet, and I think that's what really bothers people as well, and certainly me.
Yeah, we talked about that too. It's not even as much that they nerfed it, it's the silence about it that bothers people.
Absolutely.
The first thread that I saw pop up about that, actually, on Operation Sports was, it was titled something along, you can go on there and check it out. This is like something, 2K secretly nerfed My Career VC rewards or something like that. So that was the first I heard about it, and it was the first thread that I saw created, and it was all about the secrecy.
I saw it on Reddit, and it was the same thing, and I wrote about this in Monday Tip-Off about the situation. Look, nerfing VC is always going to be a controversy. There's no two ways about that. But if they'd come out and said, look, we did it because we've done the calculations, people have hit 99 overall way too quickly, you know, we found that it's not the right progression that we envisioned, people would say, oh, well, you know, you've made it a grind again, but at least you've come out and been honest about it and said it. And it harkens back to the situation with the Pink Diamond LeBron James card last year, where that code got out. Do you remember that situation at all?
I remember seeing it. Yeah.
And for those who don't remember, basically a locker code was shared by Shake and Bake, I believe, and it was for a Pink Diamond LeBron card, a guaranteed Pink Diamond, big deal, obviously, in my team.
They just removed it from people.
Yeah, because it wasn't supposed to get out there, but it did, and so at first they nerfed it and made it into a free agent card instead, and then they just quietly removed it from anybody who had used the code and got that. In fact, I did on both PS4 and PC. they just removed it from the accounts. And you could say, yes, you were never supposed to get it in the first place, but the fact that they tried to do it quietly, that they didn't announce it, and even take responsibility that, oh, you know, this wasn't supposed to happen, but... And also the fact that it happened around Christmas time, you'd think they'd try for some goodwill and say, hey, you know, if you've already redeemed it, Merry Christmas, you know, that was our bad, but this one's on us, you know, happy holidays, or whatever, you know, season's greetings. But they didn't. They tried to do it. They tried to quietly remove it and get rid of all the controversy or avoid the controversy, and that just made it even more controversial.
That's the perfect example, though. You don't care about the LeBron James pink diamond, but you understand the point behind it and that other people cared about it.
Yeah,
and that's where people are missing in the community.
And it comes down to the goodwill, but that is something I think communication is something that they really need to work on with 2K, not just being forthcoming about that, but even changing the wording of their error messages. You know, there is a problem with your connection. Oh, it's not my connection, it's your servers. You know, just little wording like that that's passive-aggressive, I think, is something that 2K needs to work on. But, I mean, with all that being said, I will say that the legacy issues do bother me with 2K20. Because some of them have been going for so long, but I have been playing the game. You know, I have been enjoying it. I wouldn't say it's the best. I wouldn't say it's the worst. But it's a game that you know, especially with NBA Live 20 not coming out, as we'll get to in a moment. It's a game I will be playing.
That's where I'm at, and I think so. My opinion, and I wanted to throw some positives out there as well for 1.07 and 2K20 in general. So I did like a 10 positives and 10 negatives in the impression section of NBA 2K20 for the NLSC, and I stand by those. I want to say that this is my favorite 2K out of the last 3 years, so I do I think overall the gameplay the players feel more authentic. It's the gameplay is tighter. It feels more reactive. I feel like it more replicates the athletes in the NBA. It's overall a better experience for me than the last, you know, than 2K18 and 2K19. As far as patch 1.07 goes, I have noticed that the defense is a little bit better in transition and on the ball. However, the blow-by issue on average defenders is definitely still there. The skating, sliding on the court, you know, lack of foot planting is still an issue. And then overall, yeah, and then the can moments. There's a lot of wrestling for the ball that happens that kind of bugs me, where it's excessive and you can't get out of it. Yep. And it lasts like 3 or 4 seconds, and it happens a little bit too much, more than it probably happens in real life. I think that and I won't go too long on this, but I think one of the the things that bugs me a little bit is they kind of hurt the face-up game a little bit. I don't know if you've tried facing up in the high post, but when you try to make a move, you kind of just go into like this slow motion bump.
Yep, yep.
Into the defender, and your guy kind of either just like drops the ball or he picks up his dribble and you're stuck.
That's right. Yep, yep. Happens on the perimeter as well. Yeah, as a
yep,
yep.
And Live got flack for that.
Yes,
Live definitely got flack for that, and you're aware of that. Live 19 had some flack for that. So is 2K20 perfect? Nope. Is it the worst get 2K ever? Nope. Am I actually enjoying picking it up and messing around on it and playing it a bit? Yeah, I actually am this year, more than the last two titles. But they need to shore up the foot planting, in my opinion, and fix the transition defense, make the defensive AI smarter, and find a better solution defensively that doesn't allow so many easy free rides to the basket.
I agree, and unfortunately, some of these things are going to be next gen stuff, especially the motion, I believe, and the physics. But if they can tighten some of these things up with patches, and you never want to have too many adjustments, you know, as we went back to at the big top of the show, talking about the game changing too much. But if they can tighten anything up, that's great. I'm looking forward to getting into my league, you know, and getting back to my franchise roots, and signing Tyreek Evans, who's still in the game despite being suspended, as you can read about in this week's Friday Five. Cheap plug.
His rookie year, and he never lived up to it after. But
one of the few players 25-5 in his rookie season, and then kind of peaked. Yeah, that was a very, it's kind of Michael Carter Williams situation, I guess. But the way it goes, I guess, sometimes.
I guess I almost saw the Michael Carter-Williams thing coming. I didn't see it with Tyreek Evans, I guess. But
yeah. And now I guess not for a couple of years he won't be in the league anyway. But So before we move on to some NBA Live 20 talk, which of course is, as you said, the big story this week, just want to touch on the NBA 2K Playgrounds 2 update. Still the most awkward title in the history of basketball gaming, possibly. 2K Playgrounds 2. They got a new update for the new season. They said 22 new players. Most of the players are actually duplicates, just basically people like Russell Westbrook on the Rockets now, an extra version of that, so it's kind of misleading about the new players. Zion Williamson, a couple of the rookies are in. Zion Williamson is not, notably, so that was kind of unfortunate. If you've got the roster unlock DLC, then they automatically unlock already. Ronnie 2K is in the game. I know everybody was clamoring for that. Or maybe not. And they've added some playgrounds from the first game and such. So it is nice to see that game being updated. But we were talking a little bit about Playgrounds and Playgrounds 2 before we started recording. And you mentioned you've been having some fun with Season with your brother. And I played it with my cousin a few times when he came down and caught up for some old school gaming nights. And it is fun, local multiplayer and co-player, etc. But it's a hell of a grind to unlock players and to upgrade players and between that and the sim approach, the sim parts, the sim elements of an arcade game, it's not quite jam, I feel. And it's a solid game in its own right, but it's, if people want to say this is this generation's jam or it's better than jam, I really must disagree. And it's not just nostalgia talking. You know, I can go into depth, but I won't at this time because I do want to do a whole jam versus Playgrounds feature at some point. But it's solid, but it's, I feel that these two games have been a bit of a letdown, and the situation with microtransactions, you know, I saw that coming with 2K, and that's been a bit disappointing.
Yeah, don't give me a 2-on-2 full court game with players with oversized heads, and then tell me that it's going to be mostly sim.
Mm.
So I think that's I think we talked about this before the call. Before this started, and my biggest issue with Playgrounds is it's an arcade game. It's 2-on-2 full court, cartoony looking characters and whatnot, but the pace is slow. It drags on. It doesn't feel like it gets old fast. In my opinion, the gameplay gets old pretty fast, and it's an arcade game that they tried to make a little bit too sim and slow. And, you know, we had discussed this, you know, people shooting threes and, you know, you shoot a three with Paul George and your percentage meter pops up at the bottom and it's like 39% chance to go in, or if you're contested, it's lower or something like that. And the layups, you have to time all your layups and you have to time your dunks. That's the part that kind of threw me off, the timing of dunks. I couldn't believe that was actually in the game. But
for an arcade game that's all about high flying dunks and ridiculous things, it's, you miss a lot of dunks. That's bothered me since the first one as well.
Right, and they probably tried a lot of them. They probably tried to, you know, we're thinking, hey, let's try to make this a different approach. But sometimes sticking with the formula that everybody loved, you know, yeah, they'll still love it. Street, home court, street, and NBA Ballers, NBA Jam, those games, if you remember, NBA Ballers later on had 2-on-2, those games had the right formula.
There's a reason they went that way. You know, you don't change up the formula unless you have a good alternative or a new spin on it, I think.
Exactly. And I think that, and so we did do quite a few seasons on it, unlock players, we're trying to level them up. The leveling up of the players is a grind, and it's also confusing as well as far as the progression goes with that. But I think the what they should do, in my opinion, you're right, the NBA 2K Playgrounds 2 is really awkward, the name. With Playgrounds 3, if they're going to come out with a new one, which I think they will now because 2K is handling that, they got to loosen up the gameplay and they have to make it fun. That when you think arcade, when you think of arcade basketball, you think of fast-paced fun. And NBA Playgrounds, in my opinion, and you know, Playgrounds 2 and whatnot, lacks that.
It's kind of crazy that you can have this arcade game and end with scores of about like 25 to 20. You know, it's and that goes back to the pace and the way the shooting works and the way dunking is not as effective as it should be. I would love to see a game go back to the old school jam approach where you have the players, two or three players from the NBA, on every NBA team available at the start. No grinding, no upgrades or anything. Or if they are, it's just one level of upgrades. Maybe just some kind of super skills you can unlock. And rather than grinding to unlock the entire roster, unlock the special players, unlock the legends. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with unlockables. I've mentioned on the podcast before. I go back to some of the WWE games that I've played over the years. I think the worst offender was, I believe, SmackDown vs. Raw 2006-2007, where to unlock Jake the Snake Roberts, you had to buy the PSP version of the game and connect them to unlock it. And like, well, no, I'm not going to go and buy the game again and a PSP just to unlock one character. So thank you, Mr. Action Replay, or Game Shark, if you will, for unlocking that, because no, I'm not going to give into that that system there. Like that.
Last wrestling, you could finish that. The last wrestling game I ever played actually was WCW versus NWO World Tour, to give you an idea of how disconnected I am from wrestling games, and that was on N64.
Well, you know what? You just play with World Tour, you would just play through the season mode a few times and unlock all the secret characters. That's all it was, you know. And my big thing about unlockables, and whatever genre it is, and certainly you look at Playgrounds being a good example of it, I believe, is that you shouldn't, by the time you've unlocked everything, or most things, you shouldn't be absolutely sick of the game. You should want to play with the things you've unlocked, with either the characters or the whatever items you're unlocking, whatever content. If it gets to the point where you just are so sick of the game by the time you've got half the stuff unlocked, that's not a good progression system, because you want to get this stuff, the really cool stuff, and not straight away, you know, make it a challenge by all means, but actually want to play with the game after you've unlocked everything, not just have it be like, oh, well, I've done all that and now I never want to touch this game again. That's not a good progression system.
Yeah, and that that was kind of it for my brother and I. We had to take a break from it. So we got Westbrook and we got Jordan. And we got and we're, you know, obviously trying to decide to choose which team we're gonna use and all that stuff, and we're, you know, for another season, and we're playing it, and the grinding to level them up once you get them, number one. But number two, and it's hard to add differentiation in an arcade game.
Yes.
It's almost impossible. But, you know, using Westbrook was just like, whatever. And my brother, that's his favorite player, and we were just like, we just lost it. Combining the lack of fun pace in the game and the arcade elements that should have been in it, and the fact that, you know, getting Westbrook and Jordan and stuff, whatnot, was not exciting, really. It just didn't produce what we wanted on the court. We just put it down.
And that's what it comes down to. So if they, as you say, it looks like they are, it would seem very unlikely that they're going to stop making Playgrounds. Maybe they updated for a couple of years and then just go on to the third one. It's something to keep in mind, but then games are changing, and that is the big problem we're seeing with 2K, the push to push for, I should say, recurrent revenue, things like that, and just simply the elitism, all that kind of stuff. It's gaming has changed, and it's hard not to sound like a grumpy old man, you know, okay, boomer. Thank you, I'm a millennial, you can rip on me for that, thank you very much. We said before the show, chatting about things, and our
No labels on the podcast.
That's right. Good approach, good suggestion. I mean, gaming has changed, and some ways for the better, some ways not just for the better. So, and I think that is one way that is definitely affecting gaming, and it's I can't wait for the bubble to burst on microtransactions if it ever happens. It'll be a new golden age in gaming, I feel.
It has to at some point, I would think. You know, there's been talk of, you know, should Live go to a free-to-play model, you know? And there's been talk of, you know, 2K's success with VC, you know, how could they possibly go back from it and everything. But I think at some point, I'm surprised we've already seen it escalating over the last 3 years. I think at some point there's going to be a title that comes along, or an approach that comes along, that takes those, you know, takes that virtual currency approach better. Maybe they still have online transactions and whatnot, but they do it better and less, make it less of a must if I, with a lack of a better term, to you know, buy it, or, you know, buy the $100 version of the game, etc. I think there is an opening for somebody else to come in and do it better and not and have and make that bubble burst. So
something I saw brought up on Reddit, actually in regards to Fallout 76, which is having a lot of controversy of its own, which won't get into, but again, it comes down to a lot of goodwill, microtransactions, things like that. Somebody brought up that we have a generation of gamers now that have been brought up on pre-order bonuses and microtransactions and things that it's been very normalized over the last generation or so. So that I've seen conversations where, again, you know, the whole old head kind of thing comes in where go back and play a game from NBA Live 2003. Go back and play a game from 2003, 2004 if you want that stuff. And I think, well, you're not really putting an old head in his place here. You're admitting that you're quite happy with these companies to screw you over. That's saying more about you than us. But it's been very normalized, this lack of goodwill, the pre-order exclusives and things like this. You've got to pre-order. You've got to pre-order the special super-duper edition that's an extra $50 or whatever to get content that really should be in the game normally, or microtransactions in it. It's getting to the point where I wonder what people won't defend as far as their favorite game is concerned, because as much as I've had fun with 2K, as much as I've, you know, really come to love the series and, you know, for it to be one of my favorite games along with, you know, the older live games, you know, I'll still call it out because this stuff isn't good, and it's, you know, it's obviously great business as far from a financial standpoint, but as far as goodwill, it's terrible.
The elephant in the room, though, is, in my opinion, not enough people talk about it, is the pressure.
Yes.
The pressure to compete. The basically, the people, like we had talked about before, the elitism of it, where there's people that are paying up. They're buying the $100 version to get the VC bonus, and then they're paying for more after and whatnot, and they're, you know, already starting out 90, 95 overall or whatnot. And what's happening is these other kids, you know, a lot of them not 18, not making their own money and whatnot, are either spending their allowance or are begging their parents to give them more money to spend on the game just so they can, you know, play with their friends. Because otherwise they are not going to be able to. Or they will feel like crap because they suck, because their character is not good. So
it's
not saying high players don't suck, because some do.
Yeah. I was going to say, it even comes down to cosmetics, because I used to be of the mind, okay, cosmetic items, whatever. But if you go to the playground, for example, and you're wearing the default outfit, the old grey sweatpants and brown shirt, a lot of people won't want to play with you, which means you don't get the experience. And because there's no proper matchmaking, you're on there with experienced players, but you look like a noob. You look like a noob, and you're not. I was going to say newbie, and I end up saying noob. if you're an inexperienced player. And if you don't have the latest proper outfit or whatever, your player isn't dressed up, you look inexperienced, you don't look like a veteran, etc., and they won't play with you, so they see your card that you're not like this. So it all feeds into that elitism, and it's like the kids getting bullied over not having premium Fortnite skins. You know, that's kind of where we're at right now, and it's
just to let you know, I still wear that basic outfit in real life when I'm going to play basketball.
Oh, of course, why not? You know?
That is pretty basic, but no, I agree 100%. I think the pressure is one of the biggest things, and that atmosphere and that culture has been getting worse and worse every single year.
It's an industry-wide, hobby-wide problem, unfortunately. And this is the thing, you can call us grumpy old men, but we're looking out for you kids. Just like when we talk about Michael Jordan's greatness, we're trying to educate. This is
absolutely, and we won't even get into that, but yeah. Yeah, I think part of the thing, I think what it is nobody, $60 for a base game that you're going to get 1,000 hours or sometimes more of entertainment out of, you know, depending on how much you want to play it, that's not a bad price.
No.
You know what I mean? Like $60 for, and I'd say that to people all the time that complain, well, we already had to pay $60. You know what? You paid $60 for the game. You're getting a lot of content for $60.
Yep.
That's, you know, a couple trips to the movies, you know, 2-3 trips to the movies, and you're getting a lot of hours out of that. But the thing is that when you're piling and you keep spending more and more and more on VC and whatnot, it becomes a lot more than $60. And the reason you're spending more and more and more on VC is just so you can enjoy the game. So if you're not enjoying the game for that $60 that you're spending on, and you're getting more frustration, you know, with that, then, you know, I let's put it this way. I don't play online, but I see why people complain.
Exactly. Yeah.
So.
And the other big problem with 2K, as we've alluded to a couple of times, is the lack of viable competition, viable alternatives. And I suppose that brings us to the one of the main topics that we wanted to, why I wanted to get the show back on the air this week. And once again, thank you for joining me as my co-host this week, so we can talk about this rather important topic. NBA Live 20 officially cancelled as of this week. I mean, we can split hairs and say that it was never officially announced, but it was there in the financial report. There was an NBA Live 20 was meant to come out this year. It was there as an upcoming title, even if it wasn't ever previewed or announced formally, whatever. They've come out with the announcement this week and talking about how their the NBA Live development team, how they're happy with the developments and the progress that's been made, but they want to keep pushing forward for the next generation of consoles and to make it as good as possible. So they're not releasing NBA Live 20. It is essentially been cancelled, you know, that whatever nomenclature you want to split hairs on, that is the case. So this is the situation. We're once again only going to have one game out this year, or NBA 2K20 and upgraded Playgrounds 2, I suppose, but there will be no NBA Live. Obviously, it has been a disappointment for some people who wanted Live to come in. And there was certainly an opportunity, D, that with 2K not having that great reception this year and people being so upset with things that have been going on, the fatigue that you talked about, there was an opportunity for Live there. But then again, it would have had to have come and impressed to really take advantage of that opportunity. And that's the other thing that people have questioned, whether it could have done that.
Yeah, and as far as the cancellation, I've seen mixed reactions. I've seen more negative than positive, more people saying, oh, here we go again. You know, Live's canceling again, and Live doesn't think they can compete, or 2K did it again. They made Live cancel. And I've seen that reaction. And then I've also seen the reaction that I have, not quite as often, but that this gives them more let's put it this way. If they released NBA Live 20 with slightly updated visuals and in a very similar gameplay system to what they had on NBA Live 19, that's not going to turn heads.
No depth of modes. Yeah,
exactly. If they're going to release that, and just slightly update the gameplay and slightly update the visuals, it's not going to move the needle, and it's not going to turn heads. And basically, they're going to be in the same position as they were when they released Live 19. So I think having the extra development time, so if the NBA Live devs were working on NBA Live 20 this whole time, that's an entire dev team that wasn't working on NBA Live 21.
Yeah.
So having them be able to start earlier and truly focus on Live 21 and, you know, put all hands on deck and make that game and the possibility of making that game a true head turner, then I think that they made the right move. But I don't think they're going to come out as soft as they did for NBA Live 14, because that absolutely was not ready.
Not at all.
But I do think that they, if they do this right, that move was very smart.
I agree, you know, and it is potentially the best move for the series. When you look at how not being able to do as much as they want within the space of one development cycle has really held the game back, this has probably been one of the weakest generations for NBA Live. I mean, even going back to all the problems they had in the 360 PS3 era, I mean, at the time, they were still getting the sales. It wasn't until NBA Live 09, NBA 2K9, that 2K pulled ahead in sales. So Live was still staying ahead. But now, at this point, as far as being the clear number two, and not just in sales, but really, you know, far behind in reception and perceived and, you know, overall quality, perception, etc., it's been a really rough generation for NBA Live. For me, the situation, I called it in the forum, I said it was a double-edged sword, because if you release NBA Live 20, as you said, and it's not as much, not a huge step forward that people want it to be, then people are going to get disappointed and they can say, oh, it's another disappointing year for Live. It's again, this is not going to move the needle. if they don't, then people are going to say, well, Live is dead, it's been destroyed by 2K, they can't even come out, it's another cancellation. Whichever way they go, there's going to be that negative reaction and perception of the brand, of the series. So what is the lesser of two evils? What is the best solution moving forward? If they are working on everything behind the scenes and getting ready for the next generation, it is, as you say, potentially the better way to go, because you get all the resources, all hands on deck, as you said, working on the new system. My concern about that is, as I've mentioned on previous podcasts, is the direction they're taking Live. Because I felt Live 19, with the focus on the streets, part of the one, etc., and clothing as the big rewards, and you know all the events were kind of around unlocking clothes for your player. I'm sure there's an audience for it, but I don't think it's the right way to go, and people can call me an old head all they want, but that didn't move the needle, and I think that's the proof is in the pudding as far as it being the right approach. You know, you can't have like a half street, half NBA Live. I don't think that's what people want.
I had a there was a big red flag for me, and I mentioned this on the forum, is when I first picked up Live, and you know they put you through the first few street games in the one,
yep,
or whatever,
yep, yep.
And after you did a move or whatever, and they did like the snapshots, and your guy like crossed his arms like he was cool and whatnot, they had the kid come onto the screen, and he's like 14 years old, and he's talking, oh, did you see, he's talking all excited about the game you just had, and he's like 14 years old. And this was right around the time when, they came out with a statement that they were targeting the younger demographic.
Yep.
And that was the first red flag. And then, basically the rest of the product showed me that that was the case. So basically what the problem is that they targeted the young teen or teen demographic mainly, and basically forgot about, everybody else. And that's the way I look at it, as far as the way they conducted their modes and the depth of their modes and the content of their modes. I think one thing that I'd like to note is, my YouTube channel, I don't do a lot on it, but I think I have about 1,500 subscribers, and the Live King, I don't know if he listens to this, but him and I talked about this before. He has a few thousand subscribers and whatnot. Yep. And I've talked to a few other people who have YouTube channels that have a decent amount of subscribers, and every single one of their channels, their number one viewing ages were between, like, I think it was like 21 and 30. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was between 20 and 30 years old. Mm. It wasn't teenagers that were watching those videos. And even though a lot of the content was like online content for some of these people, it was a mixture of all the demographics that are going online and watching these gameplay videos and, trying to see if they want to buy the games and whatnot. I think they need to really, make their content appeal to many different demographics. They need to have deeper content. And I think, do you remember how the excitement when 2K14 next gen hit, like when it was first being released? Do you remember the lead up to that?
Oh, yeah, the OMG trailer and everything, yeah. Big and video game
the
games,
excitement.
All that stuff, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the excitement to move to a next gen system, and this is why I'm glad they're focusing on it, is unreal. There's just going to be nothing but talk about it constantly. This is absolutely their chance to turn heads. It's their chance to really, and we're not saying they're going to beat 2K next year or the year after or even the year after as far as sales, but this is the chance to make people really take notice, so they have to come out strong. And if they're going to move to next gen and have content that only appeals to mostly the online demographic or the young teen demographic, and they're not going to make a more well-rounded product that appeals to more people, then honestly, they're going to fall flat again.
Agreed. I mean, you look at Live in this generation, and it has I don't want to disparage the hard work that's got into it. I mean, I haven't been able to attend any community events since 2015, but the people who work on the game, you know, the developers, really do care about the project, about the product. You know, they want it to succeed. They want it to be as good as possible. They want to do all kinds of things with it. I mean, there's also the the corporate side of things of what they want to do with the game and the direction of everything. But the problem with Live has been, apart from the gameplay issues, which are significant, don't want to downplay them, but as far as that appeal to everyone, Life has been very bare bones. You know, you've got a franchise mode that's not as deep as it was a couple of generations ago, for example. You've got Ultimate.
Yeah, they're literally missing content that they had 16 years ago.
Yeah, Ultimate Team inexplicably took a step back from Live 18. You know, they kind of dumbed it down to really go all out on the one, which, I mean, yes, career modes and the connected online experiences are very popular, so in that respect it is. And focusing on that is there's merit in that. There's not a terrible idea as such, but to the exclusion of any other content. And it's not about even necessarily catching up to My League in a year, which is impossible. But these little baby steps in other modes, these little improvements here and there that they could be making each and every year, are not being made. And it does come back to finance. It comes back to the size of the team, etc. But they've had a whole generation to be making these little steps here and there, these little additions, and they're just not happening. In fact, franchises have taken a few steps backwards. They've got a really weird calendar system that they use. You know, it's disappointing. You know, it's not catering to that demographic. And you can talk about the new demographic and the younger demographic, etc. First of all, it hasn't moved the needle, so I don't think it's a successful idea. But also, this generation, they like 2K. 2K is the cool thing. So you need to do some of the things that 2K are doing, in your own way, albeit, to appeal to them, because at the moment, what's cool? 2K. What are the kids like? 2K. So why are you not being a little bit more like 2K? Because they're doing what is succeeding. So I think that's what Life has to do in their own way, and that means depth of modes.
Yeah, I think a couple things with that is 2K being the cool thing is definitely, and why I said that, you know, Live, it's going to take a few years, in my opinion, no matter what, for them to make a dent. Means 3 solid years of doing the right thing and listening to people and implementing the right gameplay and modes and whatnot. But as far as Live, you know, 15 years ago, and actually further back to like Live 2000, you could, you know, use multiple teams in a season.
Yep.
You could, you had a Legends pool and all decade rosters. You don't have that now. So those are two that you had. Yeah. You know, 15, 20 years ago you had them, and then now you don't. And those are basics, in my opinion. Offline Legends should be standard right now in a game, in my opinion. Just like multi-team use. And, you know, they had the puzzling thing is they have it in Madden. Like in Madden 19, I have that on PC, and I have Madden 20 actually. You know, you can use every team, you can control every one of them if you want in a season. But you know, Live, their NBA product, you can only use one. But the other part is if you go back and see what they had, you know, they had like a offline 3-point shootout, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And the older Live games as well. And the dunk contest.
They had All-Star Weekend. Still the best representation of the All-Star Weekend to date, what Live did.
Oh, 100%. The atmosphere was amazing. And the presentation was top-notch, like the camera views.
Yeah.
And whatnot. Yeah, it was great. But again, now, so I've just named about 4 different things that they had 15, 20 years ago that they just don't have now. And the reason Live, in my opinion, did so well early on is because they gave people what they wanted. They had a more all-around product. People, you know, could get immersed for longer periods of time because the game modes and everything like that and all the features. And then now they're a shell of that. They can't keep people engaged, you know, for a long period of time. And that's unfortunate, and they definitely need to fix that for the next gen.
There was a time, absolutely, when Live was being very innovative and very deep year after year. People will see this as another cheap plug here, as I rerun my updated 25th anniversary of NBA Live content and through the rest of the year with my retrospectives. I've been updating the ones I've already done, and there'll be new ones coming for the games I haven't covered yet. is for those early years of Live, from 95 to about 2005, they were being incredibly innovative, like, especially from about the late 90s, the kind of stuff that would go in each and every year. You know, 98, we had the GM mode. 99, suddenly there was the multi-season mode. 2000, we got the first franchise mode, where now all we had the rookie draft and generated rookies, had the free agency trades, etc. You know, within 3 years, it went from this very we went from the old school season modes right through to the very first franchise mode, which was fantastic. And as you noted, in some ways, deeper than what we have now with franchise and NBA Live 19. Then, of course, you know, we had the three-team trades in 2001 that kind of went away. In-game saves were there for 3 years from 98 to 2000 on PC, at any rate, not so much on consoles. All the roster editing options, when they went to Dynasty mode, what they brought in, all the kinds of things that they were doing there. But then they did kind of slow down, and it really came down to what was safe, and I guess they felt they were a bit untouchable. And then, of course, 2K came through, and they were doing everything with the modes, association getting deeper and deeper, whereas a franchise and Dynasty kind of petered out a little bit, unfortunately, with NBA Live, and we still see that today. That innovation went away, and even when they brought All-Star Weekend in, and then that went away in NBA Live 10, that disappeared and hasn't been seen since. And it's been disappointing, because there was a time when NBA Live, people say, oh, well, NBA Live was never good. From the mid-90s through to about the mid-2000s, Live had a lot of great releases and was doing some incredible things, you know, and was a really, really great basketball game. You know, it competed. There was a reason it continued to sell well. It could hold its own against 2K and did some things better. But, and especially with the dribbling system, you know, with the right stick dribbling, that's something else they brought in with Live 2003. For all the things that Live 2003 did with the courtside comedy cutscenes and all the other weird stuff, it gave us right stick dribbling, which is an idea that 2K adopted, which I think is proof that it is a great idea. It was a revolutionary idea that has stuck around for 16 years. But along the way, they have lost that depth, and the recent Lives in this generation have basically been, you know, the bare minimum of what an NBA game should be. So they haven't had the extra content like the Legends. And hey, look, you know, 2K's got a lot of exclusive deals, like with Michael Jordan, who obviously still a big selling point, despite playing in an era of plumbers and dentists. you know,
he's the GOAT.
He appeals to all of us who enjoy the plumbers and dentists. But obviously, yes, they've got the exclusive with Kobe as well, I believe, and possibly Kareem as well. So 2K has advantages, and you're not going to match what 2K does with all the retro teams, but you can at least, as you said, have the all-decade teams and a Legends pool and things like that, and not having things that we had lesser generations with lesser technology, I think really stings, and it... There's a lot more to it with the size of the development team and everything and the resources they have available, and I'm not trying to disparage the work that they put into it, but as far as the direction goes, they really need to get a really good direction on this next generation, or it's going to be more of the same. That's my concern, as optimistic as I'm trying to remain.
The amount of hours that I put into Live 2000 to Live 2004 is unbelievable. I can't even begin to tell you how much I played those titles. But... You know, much like the modes, what they did was they changed their identity as well when they moved to, you know, gameplay-wise, when they moved to the Xbox 360 and PS3. Mm. And Live 06 moved like a slug, and they got away from their fun, authentic gameplay. They took out the freestyle superstars, and they went incredibly slow and basic with the gameplay. And it's almost like they went sim, but overdid it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another thing that we hear a lot in the community is, you know, Live's always been arcade, or, you know, Live is always shot to be arcade. You know, they should just make a street game. Mm. But, you know, for those of us who played, you know, from Live 2000 to 2005, and then, you know, Live 06 and forward, there's no doubt that they were shooting for sim.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of gameplay elements, and especially with the pace with Live 06, Live 07, Live 08, Live 09, and Live 10, all of those games are slow for the most part compared to titles from Live 2000 to Live 2005. And they really, really tried to go, you know, at a sim pace. And remember in Live 09, they had the live season updates,
yep.
Which updated the DNA and whatnot. And so the people that say that are, you know, they're flat out wrong. or they haven't taken the time to educate themselves, or they never played the games, because live for years has been, you know, going the sim approach.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up, because people do say that it's always been arcade, and I think perhaps they've taken at times a more casual approach to the sim approach, that they've kind of gone for that mix of maybe a slightly higher paced, slightly faster paced approach to sim. But for me, arcade is a very distinct genre. You know, it is NBA Jam, it is NBA Street, it is, you know, NBA Playgrounds, even though it has its sim elements, as we've discussed you know, a short
while
ago. You
think arcade, think the ball is on fire.
The ball is on fire, you know, flying 20 feet above the rim, you know, somersault dunks, two players, exaggerated. It's a very distinct gameplay and aesthetic is arcade. Live has always been about, it's 5-on-5, well, I mean, there's other modes of, you know, 3-on-3, etc., but the core experience has been 5-on-5, replicating the NBA, real players, real rosters, etc., and that is a sim style. Now, whether it has ever, the difference, whether it's always lived up to expectations as a sim title, doesn't change what genre it's in. I mean, I'm just trying to think of, Godfather and Freddy Got Fingered are both movies, but one is significantly better than the other. You know, one is a classic and one is The Godfather. No, I joke. But something of the same type or the same genre, you know, it's, the quality does not determine genre, basically. I mean, I suppose you could say it's too many sim or arcade elements either way, but no, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that really bothers me about people who don't know the history of NBA Live. No, it's always been sim, whether it's been as sim as we want it to be or sim in the right way, that's an entirely different debate. But then it's, then we're bringing in nuance that unfortunately I feel a lot of people aren't focusing on that nuance. But it's, in saying that, I do want them to go for that sim style. By all means, make sure it's fun. Have the sliders there so that people can choose the kind of experience they want, because that's always important. You know, I don't think you can have a game in 2019, 2020 that doesn't have gameplay sliders, gameplay settings like that. And also decide what experience you want to have online as well. That's always going to be more casual, I think. You know, I don't think you're going to have the full sim style. They've tried to encourage it in 2K, and then, or they were for at least a couple of years then, and now it's just gone to the whole metagaming. And that's a whole situation as well. But no, I want Live to focus on that side of things. And I think you can, there's still value in having the streets, because that does appeal to somebody. And just the way the playground is one of the most, if not the most popular modes in NBA 2K, you do need to have that. You just need to have a little bit more, or a lot more, as the case may be. But you need to appeal to everyone, because appealing to that one part of the demographic who already thinks that 2K is the cool thing anyway, that's not going to move the needle.
No, and you know what? They have a good base for that. Mm. That's the good thing is that they have some substance with that portion of the game that they'll be able to move over to next gen and hopefully not change it too much for the people that really liked it. I think the other thing too is some of these people that are saying that as far as sim, you know, Lives are always been arcade, I honestly don't think they've been playing Lives on this gen at all. Because if you look at the approach to Live 19 and Live 18 and Live 16, because obviously they skipped 17, even Live 15 and Live 14, actually, all of them, you can clearly see and feel that they're going for sim. Like they are doing, you can tell by the pace in which you're playing that they're not, you know, trying to, you know, make it, you know, the on-court action crazy or anything. They are trying to, you know, put some authenticity into it. Well executed? No.
Exactly.
But they are. Yeah. I think the other point is this, is as far as losing their identity. I know this is going to seem like a small thing, but I think it encompasses a bigger problem. So what's the most popular camera view on 2K?
I would probably say it's either 2K cam or one of its variants.
Right. 2K, yep, exactly. 2K cam is what I would say is probably what the majority play on.
Mm.
We don't have live cam. We don't have, you know, like the original, like Live 95, Live 96. We don't have anything like live cam. And I know that seems like a small thing, but I think it encompasses a bigger problem. Live has tried to change their identity so many times, and they never stuck with what people, And I'm not saying that live cam should be the only cam in the game. But I think what it is they've tried to change their identity and their approach so many times, but they've forgotten what the people liked, and they forgot their core, like their base, you know, like how they started out and what made people really jump on board. You know, I believe in reinventing the wheel in some ways, but I don't believe in, you know, changing your approach almost every year.
No.
And it seems like they do that.
Well, a lot. You don't put square wheels in a car just because everyone else has got round wheels. You know, you make the change that makes sense, that there's an improvement. And I mean, NBA Elite 11 is maybe the most triumphant example in the history of the series. You know, going to NHL-inspired controls, getting rid of the turbo, the sprint control, and everything like that, and the right stick shooting. Although 2K would kind of do the same thing in 2K17 to much better effect the way they handled it. I mean, Elite 11 had a lot of problems, and even if you just played the demo, you know that. But it goes beyond the Bynum glitch, which is just something that happened to one person. I mean, if the biggest problem is that one person had a weird glitch, that can happen in any game. It just really was the icing on the cake, I think, for that, because the problems went way beyond one person's amusing glitch.
Unfortunately, Tayshaun Prince had that one block on Reggie Miller, and then every game after they gave him a chase down. Based on one block.
Just the way they tried to go in a different direction. After Live 10 made some good inroads on being getting the series where it needed to be after that rough start, 06, 07, 08, you know, were rough. 09 showed a lot of promise. 10 seemed to be right back on track with it. Changing direction again, as you say, changing the identity, and whereas 2K has been, for better or worse, you know, some things that 2K has stuck fast to have not been for the better, but they have had that consistent identity, as you know, that's a great point, that Live has tried to change things and change direction so many times. It was the big problem after Elite 11 got cancelled. People thought, oh, well, they've got 2 or 3 years to be building Live 14. But really they didn't, because they were still doing meetings and putting the team together and trying to decide on that direction and changing direction again after NBA Live 13 got cancelled. That Live 14, you know, it wasn't the product of 3 years of let's make this glorious comeback. It's kind of, well, we've tried to do this and it went wrong. The first comeback attempt that got cancelled, that went wrong, so now we've got to get something out to launch in this generation. And we know what they did. Incidentally, Live 14's online support has just ended, so if you were still playing Ultimate Team in Live 14, that's over now, as of Friday. I got all the screenshots I needed, because I forgot to log in and get some more screenshots.
Live 16. I actually just played it last night. I'm still playing Live 16 Ultimate Team. So
it's really cool, actually, that they, you know, to their credit, they have let that... they've left the servers up, so it's kind of cool that they've done that, and I'm guessing next year, 15 and 16, it's going to go, but... 6 years of support for Live 14 is not too bad for a game that people definitely.
I'm incredibly impressed by that. And by the way, that not a lot of people, but it was good for it was received very well. The fact that they did that, you know, that was a really good move by them. It's to keep it up.
I also think it's good for content creators as well, because you can go back and dust off that game and get footage, and everything. Whereas I did a I was a Webet Wednesday on, what was it? Dynamic Season in NBA Live 10. And of course, I kind of got the shots of the menu when I was talking about it, and some generic shots of NBA Live 10. But of course, the servers have long been shut down, so I couldn't really go into all the menus and get all the screenshots I wanted. So it's to still have that up years later as a content creator, I think, is very handy.
Yeah, I know. I've thought about making a video actually for Live 16 Ultimate Team. Actually, I did recently, like I think it was a year or two ago. I did... do a video for Live 16 Ultimate Team. The last thing I wanted to say, because you guys hear me say it a little bit on NLSC, and is I think gameplay is of astronomical importance. I just think it's not enough discussion around gameplay.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to just say well-rounded product as far as modes and features and whatnot for Live 20. I think they need to put NBA action into the game. They need to get, you know, I think NBA action with an exclamation point.
Yeah.
You know, they need to get, you know, authenticity. They need to, get a lot more authenticity with the dribbling and even with the shooting and with the post movement and whatnot. So I don't want to restrict it to say, hey, if, you know, if they, I don't want to make it sound like if they make a more well-rounded product with deeper modes and deeper features and they get offline legends and whatnot, that they're going to be all set. I think that they need to improve that on-court gameplay experience and, you know, make it more authentic and really give people NBA action, because I think NBA Live 19, Live 18, et cetera, was really missing the action, you know, the feel.
It is, and I think, you know, shout out to Mike, to MP3, as brought it up, you know, a couple of times in discussion and on Twitter and in our forum, you know, where is the NBA side of NBA Live? And he's not the only person to make comments like that. You and I have made similar, you know, shared that sentiment, and other people have said it as well. The NBA still sells the game at the end of the day. It is, you still need that NBA element of the game. And the gameplay, yes, it is paramount. And we can talk about the modes. And it does need to be a well-rounded product, obviously. You do need to bring back some of those baby steps with little things here and there. Even if it's the small things like being able to control multiple teams in franchise and having some of the three-team trades, just little things that we've seen in the past, offline legends, etc., outside of Ultimate Team, is those are the hooks. But the game and deep modes will keep you hooked on the game, but you do also need to enjoy the virtual on-court product as well. That's where I sometimes get concerned about the influencers and whether they're what they're influencing as far as those changes. And we talked about that with patches and things like that. The say, oh, you know, we can't shoot well enough, so then shooting gets buffed or nerfed or whatever. And when we see it in 2K as well, it's listening to the right voices as far as getting that gameplay experience, because some people do get very myopic about what they want.
Yeah, I think the influencers, the big YouTube guys, I'm not singling him out, I'm just saying one of them, like Troyden, and guys like that who, you know, they get the first looks on the game and they, you know, they send them product, and those guys have, you know, thousands and thousands, sometimes millions of views on their videos. They are listened to primarily. So it's a lot of times it's not the average gamer, it's those guys. And I think that sometimes the gameplay experience can get hurt if they are listening to those people as opposed to, you know, the average gamer or the large, you know, portion of the consumer base. And, you know, the other thing is, in my opinion with this is, as far as making a product, not to go off the rails here, but it's short-term sacrifice for a long-term gain. And what I mean by that is, look at the size of the Madden development team and how much how many resources EA puts into Madden and you know all the features that Madden has. No, by the way, Madden, by, and I know there's a lot of Madden haters. I know we didn't want to use labels, but haters out there. And there's certainly faults with the game, but you can tell the attention to detail and how many people that they have working on that game. I know it costs more to have more developers and more experienced developers and more people on a certain team, but they need to make that short-term sacrifice to make any ground in the basketball gaming space. They need to get the right team in place. They need to pay the, and I don't know the ins and outs of that, but they need to make the NBA basketball game. They need to make that a priority. And the biggest thing with that is the popularity of the NBA is at an all-time high. And I think I said this before the call. There's no other competitor in the space right now. I think it's absolutely foolish in every way to not put the time and resources into an NBA title.
Absolutely. And this is my hope, and I've talked about this with Ben and Kenny on previous shows. The opening of EA Madrid is apparently going to be helping out with the development of NBA Live, much the way that I believe FIFA has about three different studios working on it under the EA umbrella. If that's more resources, more hands on deck, that would be, you know, that's fantastic. That's what the game needs. It needs that attention. NBA, it deserves that attention. It's a long running series. Somebody pointed out on our Instagram account when I posted the bulletin about the cancellation, noted it's a shame that it's happening on the 25th anniversary of the series, you know, that they're not even releasing a game, you know, and it's, of course, last year EA, who currently owns the rights to NBA Jam, missed out on doing anything for the 25th anniversary of Jam as well. These are golden opportunities, But, you know, there is, as we said, there's a reason for skipping this year as far as, you know, and again, I guess it comes down to what you're saying, the short-term pain for long-term gains.
Yep, and I think my biggest fear is that they're going to move on to next gen with a similar dev team, and by the way, this is not an insult to the dev team in place. I need to point that out, because what they do is phenomenal with the resources they have and the direction they have and whatnot. I've interacted with one of them on Twitter before. He's great. This is not – with what they've had and the resources they've had, that I think they've done an admirable job, a good job. I can't even speak today. But what I think is my biggest fear is that they go into the next gen with making the NBA still not making NBA a very high priority, and not giving the development team and the marketing team, that's a whole nother thing, you know, the time and resources to really promote this product and put out something that can compete. And, you know, as far as marketing, you were part of this. You were around for it, just like I was. You remember all the commercials we saw for NBA Live?
Oh, yeah.
Remember how much that hyped up, even when social media was at its infancy, and when, you know, we didn't have the social media outlets and the outreach, or, you know, via smartphones and all that stuff. We didn't have that, and the advertising for NBA Live was just, and the communication was just top notch. And one of the biggest letdowns for me is the lack of marketing and the lack of, you know, a community manager, like truly being out there and talking with the people, and, you know, the lack of, and maybe they haven't wanted to pump up the games because they're worried about, you know, the reception of them, but the lack of marketing and the lack of, you know, hype that we get for NBA Live is incredibly disappointing, and they need to fix that.
For me, definitely that interaction isn't there as it used to be. And it really comes down to that. Also, I feel, and a bit selfishly as a content creator myself, it's the focus on various, you know, very specific influencers and perhaps the newer people, the YouTubers, etc., and not making as much YouTube content as I do or don't. It feels like a lot of us don't have that voice that we used to, that we don't have that same interaction, that same connection. Although, as you said, you know, there's a few developers that that I talk to on Twitter as well that are great. And, you know, very receptive to that feedback, which is fantastic. But it does feel like it's very driven towards those influences, very specific influences, who may or may not have the best ideas for the game. And I think, if you look at the 2K situation, you know, and obviously this is about Live, but if you look at 2K, they have to be very careful about what they say, otherwise they lose their access. So
yep.
The feedback is not always honest then. And, you know, you it's very driven by, you know, using those influences to... you know, not just influence the game, but then to influence their audience to support the game as well and to buy the game. If they've got to walk on eggshells, or they're going to lose their logo in the playground in the neighborhood, or not get invited to community events, or not be taken seriously, or be shut out of the contact loop, the feedback loop. That's not the word I wanted, but sort of out of the circle, I should say, that inner circle of people who they're really listening to, you know. We want to connect to the community, you know, you be our voice and our face in the community, etc. If they're being threatened in any way, and I'm not saying that EA is doing this, but I do think at least 2K is doing it from some of the things I've seen, and people losing logos and such. If the influencers have got their view for the game that isn't necessarily for the best of everyone, and at the same time, if they're also being sanitized by being forced to, you know, be careful about what they say, or they'll lose their access... It's not a good situation, and yet we have the most easiest way of connecting with the development team of ever before with social media, yet the feedback is not there, and that is disappointing.
They're just not out there. I mean, if you actually look at it, I think the last post before the recent cancellation for Live 20 on the NBA Live EA Sports NBA Twitter handle was from July.
July, yeah. I saw that the other day when I was looking it up.
You can't have it. Even if you're having issues, or you're in a position where you don't have a lot of updates, talk about the NBA. You know, the actual NBA. It's an NBA live game. You know, engage people in actual NBA discussion. Engage, you know, maybe put up a poll about live games. Maybe, you know, anything is better than nothing in most cases.
do a way back Wednesday. Do a throwback Thursday. You know, put up a, you know, get the eyes on the brand. So, yeah, you remember, you know, Live 2005, you know, this was cool. And, you know, obviously people say, oh, you know, going on nostalgia, but people say, yeah, you know, that's why I do like Live.
Intro, yeah, TBT, look, this was our intro for Live 2004. Something as simple as that at least gets people thinking about Live. The whole point is getting people immersed and keeping them immersed and engaged, and that's where they really have fallen flat.
It kind of goes back to something we said about 2K as well, that the silence can be more damning than speaking out sometimes, that people like that transparency. And there's danger in transparency because you may reveal something that people don't necessarily like, but at the same time, I think people do appreciate that honesty. And that was the situation when Live was up in the air, and all we knew of it was that it was a planned release. According to a financial report, there would be no official confirmation or announcement of the game, that there was no... that it got to this point in October where we finally found out what the situation was with the game. And while it may be the right move moving forward, from July till October, we heard nothing but speculation. And it invited speculation and negative speculation at that.
And what that does is it makes Live look... the EA Sports dev team look irresponsible and like they are almost either insecure about the product or that they have nothing good to share or that, you know, or that they're just dropping out.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So. It's the optics basically, you know, the impression that they are giving. Having said that, you know, we know that they're focusing on the next generation. It seems like the lesser of two evils, because again, releasing a bad game is going to just, you never know what, from person to person, what's going to be more damaging. It depends on whatever people feel about that. But taking the most optimistic route, this does seem like it could be a really good move for the series. I do think, again, for the next game, for Live 21, they do need to bring it with some more depth across the board, bringing back some features from previous games that have been by the wayside. Even just doing things like bringing back a standalone playoffs mode would be so, you know, and there's always going to be the cynicism, people saying, oh, well, it should have been in the mode for the last 15 years. It should have been, but we've got it now. That's the main thing. They're listening to the feedback. You know, you can put aside that cynicism and say, okay, as long as they're doing that. From gameplay, I think it's focusing on the little things like the release timing on jump shots. I mean, because I know you play with shot meters off. Mostly, but even if you are playing with the shot meter off, the underlying mechanics are the same, and Live's got the jump shot mechanics in Live 19 are a very long wind up. Like, you look at the length of the meter when you've got it on. I can send you a screenshot if you haven't seen it recently.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I messed around with the meter on just to look at it before.
So you've seen how long it takes to get to the optimal release point, and that's plenty of time for the CPU, as I mentioned earlier, to rotate around and get that automatic either taking away the green release, the perfect release point, guaranteed shot, or, you know, making it a heavily contested shot, because it's a long time you've got to hold that button down to get to the optimal release point. It's a very slow wind-up. That's the kind of thing they need to focus on. Movement, player AI, even camera angles to a certain extent. Have you played any of the online or the streets at all in Live, given it a go?
Early on, I think that you know how I feel about the behind cam, you know, the 2K cam type style, and I just can't do it. It doesn't resonate with me. It's I'm doing broadcast for so long, but yeah, so I may not be as well versed as you are with that.
Well, the problem with both, and it actually applies to broadcast as well. One thing that 2K does very well with its player lock modes is focus on the player that you're controlling, whereas Live's, whether you're doing broadcast or a very 2K cam style baseline angle, is that it focuses on the ball, which sounds like a good idea until you have to defend somebody who's off screen with the camera angle, and then it's very easy to lose track because it's focusing on action that's happening away from your player, and the person you're trying to guard. So little things like that go a long way in really making the experience. And yes, it's underlying mechanics and things like, and you know, there's a lot of stuff they do. NBA strategy, realistic strategies, things like that absolutely need to be implemented. But it's even little things like focusing on your player that you're controlling rather than the ball, so that you can always have the best visuals of what your player is doing and what his man is doing, especially on defense. On offense, not as big of an issue usually with the angle, but the way the camera rotates on defense, it's very hard to see. Jump shot mechanics, underlying control mechanics, even little things with dribbling. Like with 2K, I really like that just flicking down on the stick is the behind the back, whereas with Live, it's got to be with the modifier and a rotation of the stick. It seems like a lot of the basic moves have more complex movement in Live, which is... I've actually gone back and played some of the older Lives just to see what it was like, and it's always been that way. So there has been things like... There's legacy issues in Live. As much as I've liked Live's right stick dribbling over the years, there's legacy issues with the exact inputs that I think are not as simple as they need to be. And I think that turns people off as well when they feel a bit more complex.
Yeah. I mean, you've heard me talk about this, that the fact that NBA Live 19 was released with only absolute controls for the dribbling is a red flag, in my opinion. The fact that a sports game, which holds multiple camera views and actually starts you off in the broadcast view, to not have a control system that works with that camera view, as far as, you know, giving the player options, because you know how it is when you're using absolute controls. If you're at the top of the screen and you want to dribble how it makes sense as far as it lines up with the camera view, you can't.
Mm.
It's like you're still dribbling like you're at the bottom of the screen.
So
like when you're absolute.
I mean, I've always preferred absolute because that's how Live's always been. I've always preferred the idea that the controls relate to the hands, you know, that you press left on the stick when you want to go to your left hand. But it depends what you're used to. And when you don't, as you say, you don't have that option to say, you know, go into the options. And it was why I had struggled with 2K for so many years until I went into the options. Oh, absolute. You know, that works for me. Camera relative works for other people. Not having that option for those two different philosophies is a mistake in 2019, 2018.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you're going to have multiple different camera views, you should probably have a camera relative control option. So I think that's something. And like you said, it's – and a lot of times – and that's a big thing for me, but – might be a little for somebody else, but a lot of times it is little things. Like you said, the behind-the-back dribble, the ease of use with that. You know, the mechanics in the post, just like how you can execute moves and how reactive it is when you do it on the controller. It's a lot of little things add up to create a much bigger frustration with a game. And while I said, I like the Live 19 demo gameplay, I think that it was hurt by I do believe that it was hurt by the patches, and now when I play it, I don't even, you know, I don't really enjoy myself most of the time.
No, it got to the point where I didn't touch Live 19, and part of that was because I did really get into 2K19 last year. I did really enjoy that, but I didn't really feel I didn't feel a need or a desire to split my time between the two. And yes, part of that was because I was going all out to get into the Hall of Fame in my career so that I could put the mode aside, which kind of worked this year. I'm ready to move away from it. But at the same time, you know, I really enjoyed Ultimate Team in Live 18. You know, I was really disappointed with 2K18, Live 18. It had its quirks, obviously, with the gameplay, but I really enjoyed the approach to Ultimate Team and was able to get into it. Even dropped some money to get some packs because the way they did the packs, you know, they had the legend packs that you got a guaranteed legend, whereas in 2K's My Team, the legend packs may or may not even contain a historical player, which I think is a ridiculous approach to and defeats the purpose of being a throwback pack. So when they brought out the Bulls Legends packs in Live 18 Ultimate Team with Pippen and Kukoc and Horace Grant, I knew that if I got a pack, I was going to get at least one of those plays. Maybe it was going to be a double, maybe it wasn't. Opened the pack, I got a Pippen, like, you know what?
I remember you getting Pippen. I saw you post about it, yep.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, you know what? Drop a little bit of beer money on that, a little bit of pocket change on that from time to time when I liked the pack, you know, didn't do it every time with every legend pack, but just a couple of legends that I liked, got a lot of legends that I liked, and like, you know what, I was happy to support the game, you know, I'm not, and that's going against my whole microtransactions problem, but, you know, I was happy to do it because I was actually getting a tangible reward, and that does make me part of the problem. But at the same time, the approach was fine. And if I didn't need to spend the money, if I had been grinding for the coins, I wouldn't have had to. And that is the point, is that the approach was good. Ultimate Team was fun, had a lot of fun with it, despite the problems with the game and even some problems with the mode as well. But then they went back on it, and I'm kind of over the whole career experience and not really into the streets. I don't really care about unlocking clothes for my players from brands that I am grumpy old man to have no awareness of, because I'm not cool like that, or even because they're more American brands and, you know, not really that big over here in Australia. You know, my not really, the incentive for me is not there to really unlock clothes. You know, it's, if there was more things like, if you could unlock big upgrades for your player or more animations, which they sometimes do, but it's mostly been about clothes and everything. And it's kind of, and Live 19 just didn't have enough to keep me hooked or to really say, okay, just to put 2K19 aside for a while and go back to Live 19, and certainly now with 2K20, I don't really have a lot of incentive to play Live 19.
Yeah, I have a confession too. Because you were able to confess and you were so confident about it, I did spend $10 on VC for NBA Live 16 Ultimate Team the other night. I'll admit it. By the way, that's the first time I've ever done that.
Yeah.
But I did because I wanted to. There's no marketplace really anymore. Nobody's really uploading players. So really the only choice I had to try to get a couple packs in a short amount of time was to do that. So I did it. But it was $10 and whatever.
Yeah.
Live 16 and 2K15 both had awesome Ultimate Teams and My Teams. I played so much of 2K15's My Team and Live 16. And what I think they've done, and I guarantee you're going to agree with this after what you were just talking about, is they've made the Ultimate Team and My Team a grind. They've made those modes. There's a lot of mindless games. Instead of playing 5-minute quarters in competitive games like you do on Live 16 and when you did on 2K15, what's happening now is they're sending you into these 2-minute games on easy mode.
Yep.
And you're playing these mindless couple-minute games here and there. And honestly, it bores the hell out of me.
Yeah,
and I can't stay engaged. I don't feel like it's competitive. I feel like it's just a lot of mindless grinding. And I think that's the biggest problem that people are having with the new games in general, is the grinding and the emphasis on, if you don't put some money into this, you're not going to be able to achieve what you want to achieve.
2K is better in that it's got domination, triple threat, and the weekly challenges, and plus the spotlight challenges. It's got more variation. With Live 19 in particular, you look at the challenges, and it's basically 5, 10, 15 games against the same five-man squad over and over again.
It drove me nuts.
And I looked at it, and I said, I can't play this, because it's the same game that I'm playing 5 times in a row to unlock different cards, which I then have to use in the next challenge. It was very repetitive. Whereas with 2K... Yeah. You know, I've been playing a bit of My Team in 2K20. You know, you can go to domination when I get a bit sick of going through that. You go to the triple threat. It's a different situation, 3-on-3. You know, shorter, you know, game of street ball kind of thing. Then you can go across the weekly challenges to get some tokens. You can go back and forth between the different modes in there. There's still repetition. Don't get me wrong. And you look at some of the things you got to do in triple threat. You know, you got to win 5 games to get to the next reward. That's only 500 My Team coins, and that's not really for winning 5 games to get to that next level. That's not really a lot of incentive to get there, as opposed to a pack or tokens. But there's a little bit more variation, and that again comes back to NBA Live's modes and lack of depth and the repetition there. Gameplay is paramount, as we've said so many times. But you need to get hooked. You know, if the game is starting to feel repetitive, there's got to be something about the mode that spices it up and gives it meaning. And that's
the problem though. Is you'll get the crowd too. And I've heard this when I've talked about that. They were like, "Well, sorry, you have to work for it." You know, I've heard that. And the bottom line is it's not that I have to work for it. It's that it's boring me. It's the fact that it feels unnecessary. In fact, the fact that it's not challenging. There's a lot of other, you have to put context behind it. It's not just, you know, it's not just me saying I don't want to have to grind. It's a lot of it is the type of grind.
Yeah, I'm happy to have that journey. And even if it's a long journey, I don't want it to be a crawl from New York to Los Angeles on my belly across broken glass, kind of.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's a long, terrible grind across a lot of.
I think I'd rather play Live 19 Ultimate Team than that.
Yes, it's probably slightly less of a grind. That's a lot.
Yeah,
coast to coast on that. But
that's why people are playing 2K14 still, and a lot of people, you know, see that section active. It's not just because of the modding. A lot of people aren't moving on because they like, and we're talking about the on-court action. They feel the gameplay is tighter and more for them, and it's more, they feel it's more balanced and whatnot. It's just there's so much importance, you know, on what's happening between the lines.
Absolutely, and I think they have lost. I mean, obviously they've gained a lot of people. They've got a bigger user base than ever, but is it appealing to everybody? And the answer is no. And people do feel that it was, as you say, a tighter experience. A generation ago, and now of course we have the new generation coming up. How do you address that, especially with the changing trends in games? You know, because it has become about recurrent revenue and everything, and what do they call it? Surprise mechanics, not loot boxes. Surprise mechanics and all kinds of talk about labels. And of course, there's a generation that likes that. So I mean, it's in that situation where I feel that I'm not necessarily in the heart of the core demographic. But we're still in the demographic, but not necessarily the absolute main target audience, which I guess is also hard and makes one feel old, obviously, to realize that.
You're more in it than I am, because you actually play online. I have a, that's not a part of my basketball gaming routine. So,
well, I did actually play, I've played a couple of games recently in 2K20. And it reminded me why I stopped playing online last year. I wanted to see what it was like this year, and it's part of it's the game, part of it's the approach, the metagaming, the culture of the online culture that's being cultivated, as far as selfishness and everything. You've got people just putting up 35-foot three pointers out of a double team, and while you're wide open and calling for the ball, because it's like, oh, but you might miss. You missed that last shot. Like, yes, but you've got three people around you and you're 40 feet from the basket, you know?
And that's why a 95 overall player doesn't mean that that person's good at the game, because that's
exactly. But, and that was, I had one good game and I had a couple other things. But the other thing is with 2K, and I know we're getting a bit off the live topic here, but with 2K, with the MyRep system and all the problems it has, is a lot of the rewards that were tied to overall last year are now tied to MyRep. Which means you have to play online to unlock things that are for the NBA offline side of things of my career, which doesn't make sense. So there's little things like that conceptually that we're seeing these days that are very annoying, and it goes back to, you know, having that content available, readily available to everybody. And it's not that you don't want to work for it, but it really should be viable. I really feel that with something that Live needs to do, and 2K definitely needs to do, and Live should do it, and it's one way that Live would actually jump ahead of 2K as far as its design concepts, is to make sure that if you want to, with the career, if whether you want to focus on the NBA, Playground, or Pro-Am situation, if you want to do all three, or any one of the three, it should be equally viable and as far as unlocking rewards. Maybe you have some specific for each mode, because, you know, they would only apply to that mode, but if you have to go online to get if you have to go online to get offline rewards, that's not a good approach.
I agree with that 100%. I think, and that's a good graces thing. That's something, you know, they shouldn't have to go, you know, back to that. It should have been standard, but that's something that's a change. And remember, I said this too, where I said that, you know, 2K is in a way vulnerable because of what's happened the last few years. As far as if somebody came up with a different approach, like you're mentioning, and they came up with an approach that not only provided people with good gameplay, but gotten people's good graces as far as something like that, like the rep system and the reward system, I think that would turn a lot of heads, and that could also move the needle a little bit. It's like a little thing for some people, but really, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's pretty big.
And there's always debate about whether live needs to be like 2K. And I wrote an article about this a few weeks back, maybe a few months now. A lot of people say, oh, well, live shouldn't just try to copy 2K. And in many ways, it shouldn't. It should be trying to do its own thing. But a good idea is a good idea. And if you can take a good idea and do it differently, and that difference makes that same idea or similar idea even better, by all means, do it. You know, you need to be providing some of the same experiences, but if you can do it better or in a way that's more appealing, more goodwill, there's no reason to say, oh, well, don't do it at all just because 2K has done it. Because if you can do that idea better, why not?
I find it funny, the whole copying each other. And the reason is because the people do realize that they're both emulating the exact same league.
Exactly.
And they're both marketing their game as a 5-on-5 simulation. Mm. They are both going to have similarities. That's the bottom line. There is no way, if NFL 2K came back, like if 2K got the license back, Madden and 2K would have to, they're both emulating NFL football with the NFL license, and they're both would be for sim. There would have to be similarities between the two. And of course, at times, like you said, a good idea is a good idea. NBA 2K on NBA 2K13 was the first game that they had right stick dribbling. It was the first game. Yep. Live had that for years.
10 years.
Before.
10 years.
10 years before NBA 2K started using it. Did they copy Live? Maybe. But good thing they did. That was the right listen. That was the right move, and it made a lot of people happy. We were done with the days of, you know, the even though I like it at some point, of tapping the left bumper at the top to do dribbling moves. And, you know, NBA Live had the WNBA. So just because NBA Live had the WNBA, 2K is copying them because they put the WNBA in their game? No. I mean, the WNBA, they both have the WNBA license.
Yeah.
So they're going to have them in the game. So it's like it's this thing where it's frustrating because people just don't see the big picture with that.
And 2K brought in a season mode. They did it better, and that is the another knock on Live. You know, it doesn't matter who's first, who does it best. So as we look ahead to Live, you know, hopefully launching next year with the next generation and being that strong comeback. I mean, it's something we could spend like another hour talking on, obviously. But very basically, what would a successful comeback for Live look to you, like, as you know, just basically as far as gameplay modes, what's a successful comeback, a relaunch, reboot with the next generation?
I'm not going to give it this is a great question. I'm not going to give it all away because I want to be actively involved in some way as far as giving feedback specifically to hopefully, you know, powers that be to, you know, help with certain ideas and whatnot. But basically, what success would look like to me is a balanced basketball game that turns heads visually and with and gameplay wise that also is marketed like never before.
Mm.
That would look like a good title for, you know, a successful launch on the next gen. You know, there's, it was kind of silly, but there's this Nelly song called Grills. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard that. But, you know, he's talking about, you know, the whole song is about, you know, they want to see his grills, and his grills are a head turner, and you know, let me see your grills, let me see my what and whatnot. I want to see – Live needs grills, in my opinion, to use that song. They need the head turner. They need to be – they need to have people saying, let me see that. You know, mm-hmm. I want to see that. And they need people to be – the marketing team needs to have people going onto YouTube, going onto social media in general, and looking up Live 21 to see what they're doing. There can't be any halfway with the marketing. There can't be any halfway approach with resources given to the team and time and resources in the team. In my opinion, this is an all-out effort that needs to be put into the marketing and development of this game in order for them to, you know, get their grills and get people to actually turn their heads and pay attention.
No, that's obviously there's a lot we can go into with the feedback and, you know, improving the gameplay to make it more NBA-like. to have the strategy there, to have the player movement right, to have the controls feel good, to have it look and feel good is very important aesthetically, and the feel of the game. Absolutely. I wanted to see them bring back some of those features that they had before, even if it's little things and step by step, just deepen up those modes, appeal to everyone. You know, that everyone, if you want an NBA game, a similar NBA game, this should, you know, you should be able to pick up this game is what, you know, what they should do. And to your point, marketing that and saying, this is what we have. Obviously, you need to put in the work to have features to promote. You know, you can't just say, this is the great game, and then not...
silent.
Yeah. I think, you know, you mentioned the Live King. You mentioned Steve before. I think he's done some of the best work in the live community as far as the far as his videos. If I'm EA, I'm reaching out to him and, you know, saying, okay, here's some footage, you know, some work in progress footage. If you want to do this for us, if you want to be our Shady, and Shady, you know, who's obviously amazing as well, has done some great work for 2K, and he's done some stuff for Live as well. I think definitely engaging the community, selfishly engaging people like us for feedback and things like that. I think we've, you know, got the good ideas and the fingers on the pulse in that situation, as many people do, as many in the NLVC do as well. You know, there's some great ideas going out there, and listening to that feedback. I think putting out those in-depth developer blogs like 2K does as well, you know, saying this and listing all these, you know, exciting changes. Obviously, again, you have to make those changes and improvements to the game, but really pushing what's happened and having not just some vague features list and you know, because that's all part of marketing as well, but saying this is what's gone into the game and it demonstrates that they've been listening and everything like that, and getting people excited about these features. Because you can talk about 2K, how people are falling for the hype every year, and yes, some of that's on us, but you look at the developer blogs and they talk about something, they mention something, and you think, oh, they've been listening to us on that one, and that's a significant change. I'm interested in that, you know, and it's not just a trailer, it's about what they've said.
yeah.
So
I think the thing is, and I agree with you, the thing, the Shady and the Live King are amazing. The Live King does some of the... He did that Oladipo video and the Uncle Drew video,
yep,
and whatnot. I love his content. And him and I have a very similar approach to, you know, sliders and gameplay. And we have a lot of the same opinions on it. And I really like conversing with him. But like you said, reach out to these people. Like, hey, reach out. Maybe I don't make the best videos ever, but reach out to me. I'll promote it. You know, you have a lot of people that would do free promotion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot of people who would be, willing to, you know, pump up your game and show off the game the way it should be shown off and whatnot. And if you have a QA policy, you know, a quality assurance policy you have in place, you know, we can send the videos to you and you can review them before we, you know, put them up or whatever. But, you know, let us help you and try to help yourself, because, you know, you're not doing yourself any favors by being silent.
It's having been doing this for 18 years with the NLSC and having that interaction before and the way they used to send through assets and everything. And it's different now because you've got social media and everything. You don't necessarily need to rely on fan sites or even influencers sometimes. You know, you've got your own social media channels to do it. But it's so much goodwill that you can be interacting with the community like that, giving that insight into the development of the game. Not that silent approach, not that vague approach, not the 2K patch notes approach to promoting the game. We've improved the game with many features. Yes, let us know what they are. And
more features. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we try to avoid that labels and things like saying a well-rounded product. It is obviously what they need to do with Live 21. It needs to be that next step forward. It needs to be... It can't be like Live 14, basically. It can't be like a lesser product than we've seen 15 years ago in across the board. It needs to be that strong game, and it needs to be blasted out there. It needs its own OMG trailer, basically. And on top of that, and developer blogs and everything else. I hope it does, because we really do need that. We need that viable option, at least have those two viable marks. I mean, you remember back in the day, all the games we had, I mean... Back in the 98 season, you had NBA Live 98. You had NBA Action 98 / NBA Fast Break 98. I remember we both thought we were talking about it at the same game. We thought...
Exactly. Mine came with it, and yours went. Yours came to you with Visual Concepts, but the gameplay was the same.
It's the same. It's the same game. NBA Fast Break 98. Yep. It's the precursor to NBA 2K, because Sega Sports made it. So it's... Yeah. So yeah, it's basically the precursor to that, and we both thought we'd found the precursor. I was like, actually, yeah, we are. It's the same game. That's why
Great game too, by the way. If anybody hasn't tried that new retro gaming, check out NBA Action 98, or depending on where you are, NBA Fast Break 98. Yeah. It was very underrated.
It's the PC version and Sega Saturn version, I think, was NBA Action, and then there was Fast Break on PS2. And that was the other thing back in the day when games would have different names, like NBA Shootout was Total NBA here in Australia, the Shootout series, so things like that. But you have all these different games to choose from, and it's maybe that wouldn't be so great these days because the bar is higher for what is expected, especially with some of the great things 2K has done. But we need those viable options because we've seen what 2K has done with recurrent revenue, and not everything that they've done has been for the best or made everybody happy. So if you don't have those alternatives, you know, people say Live needs to go away, but then they say that, 2K is doing all this stuff. Well, what do you want? You know, do you want alternatives or do you want a monopoly?
Yeah, people forget, you know, they talk about, well, these guys are copying each other. You know, if Live wasn't around, maybe 2K wouldn't have had some of the things they have right now because they copied Live.
That's right.
And by the way, nothing wrong with that because they copy each other. But the point is having competitors just makes the game stronger, and it makes them sweat a little bit too. And it makes them even possibly work harder on the products. And I think the other thing about that too, as you would talk, so I'll be a little bit more specific, is I think with Live 21, I think what they need is they absolutely need camera relative controls. I think they need to get back to their roots, and I would even add like a Live Cam and a few other different camera options.
If they brought back the classic cam, the isometric view, it would just be such a throwback. I'd love to see it.
A lot of people would play that.
Yeah.
Like, it was a good view. Yeah. Even without rotating.
NHL do something like that? The classic controls, classic overhead camera, something like that?
They did. Yep, they did. And see, that's what I don't understand about the inconsistency of EA Sports as far as the resources they pool into and the options they put in certain titles, and then other ones they just completely fall behind on its features. And I think the NBA, it's a huge mistake to not to let that one, you know, take a back seat. But just because of the popularity of the sport. But I think, you know, offline legends is definitely a necessity. They need to beef up the franchise mode and make it, you know, not only a better layout, but more options within the franchise mode, including multiple users of teams. And I think that the visuals need to pop. I think that while gameplay is the most important as far as their marketing scheme, I think that they need to have the graphics on point.
First impressions matter, basically.
First impressions just matter. I mean, even, you know, look at all the people that lurk YouTube. I mean, look at all of the people looking for early footage of the games. And while gameplay is the most important, graphics, especially coming on to a new generation, they can't have what they had with Live 14 as far as being so far behind their competitor. So
I mean, you can look at the controversy, and I don't know how, obviously you haven't played the wrestling games for a while, but with the fixed WWE 2K20, and even before that with the previews, people were saying this is, and of course they pulled out the old PS2 graphics, and it's not quite that bad, but it's more like Xbox 360 PS3 graphics, that the graphics have seemingly taken a step back, the hair physics, everything that gives that first impression of, wow, this looks like a really cool game to play. It matters. It is that first impression, and I mean, I can play a game that has subpar graphics if the gameplay is, you know, not up to scratch. That's because gameplay is paramount. But that first impression that makes you want to try that game and think, you know, does this look like a product that's because if a game does look that janky and last gen, there's a chance that it has some other last gen issues as well.
Or you could be the opposite and look at Live 06, where it looked good, and then it's just the gameplay was just.
Yeah, absolutely.
Overall. And then the depth wasn't there either. So you can have the other way. And then where the game, they're like, wow, the visuals look great. Because NBA Live 06 overall, the player models and the faces and all that stuff looked better and more sim and realistic than 2K6.
The temple was awesome. Stuff like that. But then when you go into the game and you don't even have instant replay in the pause menu. You know,
you have like two camera views, and they're all, and both of them are absolutely terrible.
And that's the thing we talk about. Live 14, it can't be Live 06 either, and it comes down to being that bare bones and oddly designed kind of situation. Which it just can't be that, and hopefully it's not, because I obviously have a lot of nostalgia with Live and that connection to it, and we were founded as the NBA Live Series Center, of course. So I want to see those two games succeed. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see Live defeat 2K any more than I want to see 2K smash Live. I want them to be those two viable games and to bring their own things to the table. Yes, but they do need to have that common ground, which is to be quality NBA Sims, and I do hope we see it next generation.
No, absolutely. And I think that, and you touched on something that, you're like, I don't want, I want 2K and Live to be great. I think, and I mentioned this before, I think the majority of people who say Live sucks or Live should just give it up, the majority of them don't mean that. Because if you actually produced a basketball game that was really fun to play and one of your friends picked it up and you were like, oh my God, this game is great. And it was, visually stunning and the gameplay was great, then guess what? They would play it. All people really want, and vice versa, the people that say, oh, 2K sucks, what people really want is a game they can make memories with.
That's
That's
right.
it. And it doesn't matter if it comes from EA Sports or back in our, because we're old, 989 Sports. It doesn't matter if it comes from Midway. It doesn't matter what company it is. Even the people who complain constantly or who say drop low, Live should just give up and everything, they want a basketball game they can make memories with their friends. And that's all we really want. And I'm just like you. I want 2K and Live, and whoever else wanted to get into that space, I want them to thrive because it's going to give us and everybody more memories that we can create in basketball gaming.
And I suppose worst case scenario, I've got Fallout. So, but.
I have Fallout 4 and Fallout 76 actually installed, and I didn't play Fallout 76 very long.
Me
Let's
neither.
put it that
No,
way.
it's and that is the other concerning thing, of course, the direction of games, and how they're approaching game design and the culture of gaming. But yeah, it's try to remain optimistic, obviously, because yes, there's certainly criticisms we can make, but like you say, we do want to make those memories on the virtual hardwood, and sometimes I wonder about I have used the term virtual hardwood, but it's I think it's a bit more colorful than saying basketball video games over and over again. You want to do it whether it is against or with friends online, or whether you want to have that really in-depth My League franchise gaming experience where you create this dynasty that goes year for years and drafting these. We all know that if you use fictional draft classes, that the fun you can have by having that generated player who then becomes real to you, damn it. Things like that. I mean, you look at Kenny's NBA Live 10 Dynasty thread where he had Boris Perko and how Perko became a star and how all of us who were following the story, really got behind Perko, with all these triple doubles and
People
everything.
that, like, yeah, look at the career mode guys that they've made. I know they weren't big, real famous at the time, but like what was Justice Young?
Yes,
Like,
yeah.
look how there's like a cult behind Justice. Like, there are people love seeing characters like that and then bringing up their character to play with those characters and all that stuff. If it's done right and stuff, that people really make memories with that stuff.
If it's not beef fresh, people like it. But
Right.
that's.
And if you're not called Orange Juice,
Yeah.
then
But, yeah, so, I mean, here's hoping, right? And that's obviously, we'll continue to send that through feedback. I'm thinking maybe we should do an updated wish list for NBA Live 21, just with since we have that extra time to send it along, we might as well revise what we did for 20 and get some more ideas going.
I think that's a great idea. And I think that you saw, I created a thread that talked about, that announced it was canceled. And you saw, a bunch of people jump in and give their opinions. Many were disappointed. But I think that a wish list this time around, especially with us moving on to next gen, is going to get a lot more activity.
So by all means, let's get on that. By the time this comes out, we might have already created that thread. Keep it locked to the now renamed NBA Live 21 section in the forum. I've had to go through and change our wiki and everything to redirect, so it's all NBA Live 21 with notes about cancellation. But as a community, we can turn this into a positive and hopefully help EA get back to where they need to be. As you say, it's not going to be within the space of 1 year, maybe not two, maybe not even three. But you keep making those strides, and that's what we want to see, and that's ultimately, what'll get us to where we want to be, and where I'm sure they want to be too.
Yeah, absolutely. really excited. I'm also happy that I found somewhat of a balance with 2K20 to hold me over. As you know, I play a lot of 2K16 and 2K17 at the moment, and a lot of the past games like 2K11 and everything. But it is nice to be able to play a title that I'm not, you know, because I was really frustrated with 2K18 and 2K19. It's really nice to be able to play a title and not just, you know, want to put it down a few minutes into it. So
I've been sold on using the Bulls in my league. A user in the forum, I'm sorry, your username is slipping my mind at the moment, but really sold me on the idea of using the Bulls. But then real life hasn't really got off to a great start, unfortunately, for them so far. But in the, that's the beauty of video games. I can write my own story, basically.
Right, exactly. If you want to get Markkanen taking more shots, or, hey, you know, get Chris Dunn out there starting. I'm sorry, I still think Chris Dunn should be the starter. Well, I don't know how you feel about that. But
I want Coby White to come into his own, basically. That's
you do?
Long time, yeah. I'm remaining optimistic about the White Markkanen and Levine trio. I mean, at least in video games, I feel like it'd be really fun to play, so I'm going to give that a shot.
How do you feel about Chris Dunn?
It's better than Johnny Flynn. You know, well, compared him to Johnny Flynn, as far as being that Tim Wolves pick that didn't pan out at point guard. I don't dislike him. I guess I'm just not completely sold on him being the guy. Maybe, you know, I guess I'm probably more looking forward to a Coby White becoming, you know, that combo guard, I guess, at point guard. But yeah,
I like his pace on offense. I like Coby White's pace on offense. I like Chris Dunn's defense.
That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe it's because Chris Dunn still takes too many steals from me in my career. Maybe that's a weird thing. Kenny wrote an article about that, about players that you start disliking because of video games. It's just,
oh my god! I made a post about that right recently. Like, you know, damn you, Alonzo G, and and Sue Sese, and you guys that killed me on past games that shouldn't have.
The great Chris Wilcox.
Oh yeah, and the unstoppable Wilt Chamberlain esque Hasheem to beat.
Oof.
Yes.
So sometimes sim games do go awry. as much fun as we've had.
But that's part of the. I mean, my brother scored 100 points with Dan Dickow, and I think it was live 2004, and it was quite the moment.
Dickow
should be scoring 100 points.
That's quite an effort, yeah. You know what? He deserves to take Dominic Wilkins number 21 after that. You know, he can. Do you remember when you came into you came into the league and had to change to number 12, and he's like, "Who has 21 on the Hawks?" And like, Dominic, "Oh yeah, okay, I'll take number 12 then." So.
You know, I talk about enough, but then that doesn't get enough respect.
Go there. Dominic, yeah, we can go another hour talking about Dominic, Patrick Ewing, and many others that of the so-called plumbers and dentists who do not get the respect these days. But
Dominic Wilkins was a hell of a plumber, I'll tell you.
You got retweeted by Dominic, didn't you?
Yeah, a few times actually. Replied, what's funny is I have this. I have a soft spot for, you know, these athletes that. They truly, in Jamal Crawford's another one, who they truly retweet or engage with people on social media. And Kevin Durant actually has been, for better or for worse, has been involved in back and forths on Twitter. And Dominic Wilkins is one of the ones who's retweeted me and actually responded to me. And I bought one of his shirts that are part of one of the charities that he's running. And whatnot, and he just seems like a genuine guy, and so does Jamal Crawford, and I'm a bigger fan of both of them because of the way they interact with me on social media.
It's not just retweeting because they're getting paid to do so, or because it's a brand kind of thing.
Exactly, they're doing it because they're human, and I know we want a lot of times put legends and athletes in general on a pedestal or you know, think of them as godly or whatnot, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're human just like us.
And hey, on that note, shout out to Eldridge Rukasner as well. Follow him on Twitter.
He's great. Yeah. He is, you know, for anybody who's listening to this that doesn't, Eldridge Rukasner, Jamal Crawford, Dominique Wilkins, Andrew Bogut, actually, a little bit. Those guys are good follows. Eldridge Rukasner is just like one of the guys. He's talking to everybody on Twitter, and it's really refreshing to see. And you know, he shared a lot of stories of when he was like with the Rockets and whatnot, and you know, guarding Jordan and whatnot. So it's really cool to see that.
Absolutely, go and follow those guys. Follow us as well. You know, we have our own hot takes from time to time. Speaking of which, I mean, that has brought us to the end of a return episode of the NLC podcast, episode number 298. A bit longer, but fun to get you on, and finally and talk to you, D.
No, this was fantastic. You know, if you ever want, you know, ever have time to have me on again, I'd love to be on again. And you know, looking forward to Live 21, and you guys can see me on the NLSC forums, because I'll sure be posting. So
absolutely, and you know, appreciate you doing all that and getting. You know, we want that conversation to go. So by all means, you know, sign up to the forum. Just a quick note, of course, forum accounts now. Can comment on the front page articles as well. Now I've got that plugin working, or a new plugin working. There is some issues with the mobile version. I found that, you know, thank you for checking that for me as well. There does seem to be some issues with the responsive, you know, mobile version of the site, but I'm trying to clean those up. But if you have any issues with connecting the two accounts, just let me know. And but hopefully, you know, get the conversation going on our articles, and definitely in the forum, you know, as we talk about NBA 2K. And obviously we have a great modding community going on, and you know, you've been part of that as well as a modder, D, and love that conversation as well. But you know, let's talk about the games and get that great conversation going.
100%, and I kind of harped on that a little bit recently, and you and I talked about it, is I think what's been lost a little bit is discussion about not only the gameplay, but the modes, and you know, how people are feeling about the games and the actual on-court action in between the lines. So I would love to see more conversation about that, and I'll definitely be active in that part.
Let's get it going. I mean, hey, as long as you're playing with a non-pirated version of the game, you're not going to get banned for sharing your opinion. So jump right into that.
Actually, I haven't seen that as much, so that's good.
That's right, you know. You wield that ban hammer, man. You know, the power.
I don't ever want to get that hammer, so trust me, I will always buy a legal version.
You know me. I'm a terrible mofo, apparently, so that's...
Oh, I read all about it. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, you know, you're around, obviously, D43 in the forum. Where can people find you on social media, your YouTube? You know, let's get you some plugs going with that. And, of course, you're part of the NLVC, the Veterans Committee, now as well. So anything you'd like to plug before we wrap up?
Absolutely. So I am on Twitter at D4384. I have D Brown with his no-look dunk as my profile picture, so you can find me on there. I am on YouTube as well, just under D43 with the same picture, so it's the D Brown no-look. And so if you guys want to see gameplay videos, definitely check them out. I do the newer games, but also throwback gameplay videos, you know, of the older games, going back even as far as the early 2000 lives. And then you can also connect with me on the NLVC, the NBA Live Veterans Committee. I believe we have a podcast tomorrow around 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I have a link to their Twitter handle in my Twitter bio. So you can connect with me there, and obviously on the NLSC, D43.
Excellent. So that does bring us to the end of episode number 298 of the NLSC podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast. You can keep tuning in on the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, of course. But you can also find us on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Stitcher and Spotify. Search for NLSC Podcast. Look for our logo. That will be us. Or once again, keep streaming on the NLSC. As long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. Our social media handles on Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And once again, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.